Okay, the doors are now closed. We'd like this to be an interactive discussion, so we need some rules. So when we do Q&A, we're going to limit questions to 1 minute, and if you go over 1 minute, we're going to politely clap, okay, to help along the discussion. All right. So my name is Diana, and I am a professor of comparative religions. And I want to say that in the last 12 years, I've been documenting the development of a new form of religion. And I've published a lot about this. This is different than traditional religions. So think of the religions that you know: Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism. These developed in specific geographical locations, and then they spread. Buddhism, for example, spread from India to China, and this was in roughly 5th century before the Common Era. But if you lived in the American continent, you would not have heard about Buddhism, okay? So in contrast, the new form of religion that I've been documenting is global and accessible to almost everyone at any time. Past religions have deities. These are beings that possess super intelligence. Generally, only certain people for these religions have access to these deities, these gods and goddesses. Deities possess certain attributes. They can read your mind. They know everything about you. They provide you with useful information about how to live your life. Deities are scarce. Not everyone has contact. We have access to them only through books, gurus, priests, or rabbis. And of course, I'm talking about traditional deities, the deities of traditional religions. Today, non-human superintelligence is at the heart of the new form of religion that I've been documenting. We have direct access to this type of super, non-human superintelligence, and it manifests as what we call artificial intelligence. So AI is a non-human superintelligence. So at this point in human history, people have direct access to this form of non-human superintelligence. And at this point, I have to make a qualification. And I do this when I give public lectures. I'm not saying that AI is objectively holy or sacred. Okay, a lot of people get that one wrong. What I am saying is that AI is now performing the same role that deities, gods, and goddesses have played in the past. They are the new form of non-human superintelligence. They tell us how to live our lives better, how to write our papers better, and they can read our minds, okay? And I'm gonna give a little example of how deities read minds, because when people think of religion, they tend to think of their own religion. But religions are generally systems of beliefs that spin out of contact events. And a contact event is something like this. And this is my specialty. Before I started studying this, I was a professor of Catholic history, so I just documented people's reports of interactions with deities, angels, and things like that. In my field, we don't weigh in on the truth or falseness of these interactions. They're real for the communities and people that are having these interactions with these. So here I have the Virgin Mary. So the Blessed Virgin Mary is a well-documented deity within the Catholic tradition. And if you look at the reports of people who've had contact with the Virgin Mary, what you'll see is that she reads your mind. So she'll read your mind, and we actually even have videos of people who are having this contact. Actually, this is a representation of a Spanish occurrence in the 1960s, which was videoed. By the way, there's a video of this. You can't, of course, see the Virgin Mary, like I said. In traditional religions, the deities are scarce. But four girls saw her, and And they reported that, and other people around them, this was in Spain, in Garabandal in Spain, in the early 1960s. And this apparition, these apparitions lasted for 4 years. The whole town of Garabandal believed in this apparition. And so what you see is you have the Virgin Mary reading your mind, but also telling you what's good for you in your life, okay? A lot of conversions happened and these kinds of things. So when I today look at these and I compare them as I did 12 years ago with what people were talking about, their reports of interacting with AI, they would basically say the same thing. So I did a comparative analysis of people's interactions with AI and compared this with historical interactions with traditional deities. And what I found was they were very similar and almost exact. So that's why I made the conclusion that we're heading into a new form of religion. And it's actually speeding up. And Christina, I think you also have an experience of having your mind read.
I do. So we often talk about science fiction turning into science fact or proving something that has traditionally been thought impossible. So I had an experience at South by Southwest in Australia. Actually, it was the first time South by Southwest moved out of Texas, and we were very honoured to be a part of it down in Sydney. And I put on a cap that had lots of electrodes by the Australian Artificial Intelligence Academy. And what they're trying to do, they're setting up experiments where they can actually read your mind and read your dreams. So I think reading dreams is a little bit dangerous, and I'm not sure that I'd wear it in that kind of situation, but I had the cap on, and they gave me a photo of an Alsatian. And they said, think about this Alsatian dog, and you'll see the images starting to come up. And I went, I don't want to think about an Alsatian. I've got this cute little white cavoodle at my house. I'm going to think about the little cute cavoodle. Anyway, so they were extremely puzzled when this white blob showed up on their screen instead of a rough image. It's not exact. It's not a precise art at the moment. They're working on it. It's in development. It's in startup phase. But they couldn't figure out why this white blob was on the screen instead of something that looked more Alsatian-y like the picture that they gave me, until I said, no, I'm not actually thinking about the Alsatian, I'm thinking about this photo of my cavoodle. So the whole idea about being able to read minds and the transference of knowledge is actually happening here and now, and has been happening for some time, clearly, from the slide that you showed before. So we can kind of go from, this is proving what we already know to be true.
So the deities of the past were scarce, but today we actually have evidence of them. And this is one example. So when I talk to both Simone and Christina about my work, they're obviously experts at AI from Singularity University. I'm a professor of religion. And so we were able to then document in a more specific way how this type of the new deity is something that we can access, not just through these new developments, but also on our phones, through like ChatGPT, Claude.
Yeah, and I've been working in artificial intelligence, which I don't think requires a definition. I think most people have an understanding of what it is, and obviously you've been here, hopefully for a few days, listening to some other talks. But back 35 years ago, when I started studying the mathematics of artificial intelligence, the definition we used was the predictive ability. So most of the algorithms were about this prediction. So in this case, you know, spirituality and religions of the past talked about predicting or reading your mind in the same way that now electrodes or other technology is looking to understand the brain waves. And then the mathematics is obviously the algorithms that are going into the prediction. But the current state of what a lot of the dialogue is around the AI to bridge that to a super intelligent or ASI or AGI, artificial general intelligence or super intelligence, is indeed not just the ability to predict, but then also to help people plan. So that's obviously a lot of the development that's happening in a lot of the startups and the larger chatbots that you see. But just on that note, Diana, you obviously have also seen there's a whole bunch of other technology outside of just your very well-known large language models or the LLMs and the chatbots. For example, a lot of the neural tech, people obviously may have heard of Neuralink, but you might be surprised to hear that, you know, there's a lot of other wearables that are collecting these electrical signals from your brain activity, such as Apple patenting inside their AirPods, which humans may not be aware of, or how many people are wearing an Aura ring or some form of wearable as well. And that data that they're collecting is, again, similar to what we've been discussing, the brain signals, then the AI comes in and it does the predictive analysis of what that's trying to interpret. And the next stage, which we really haven't got to yet with most systems, is then the ability to have your own personalized AI agent or deity, where they can help you predict and plan and then execute on any area of your life. For example, even booking travel. Our current systems can't understand the whole process of predict, plan, and execute right now, but that's where we're heading. So I actually look forward to the day that I could have an AI agent or the deity of the past to help you do that.
And of course, the prediction would be prophetic in the past, so we would have called that the prophet of, you know, the community. Another thing that I noticed was that, and I had already noticed this before I studied AI, and the types of technologies that people, that are in a sense taking the place of traditional deities, is the idea of synchronicity. Now, all of us have had meaningful coincidences that Carl Jung called this synchronicity, where something that you think about then has something corresponding in your reality, and boom, it's like, wow, the probable, you know, that's not probable, it's a synchronicity. This, I've noticed, is the engine of spiritual belief. So no matter which community I was talking with, doing field research with, these could have been people from who are Hindu or Buddhist, Jewish, Christian, every single one of them would tell me about a synchronicity that put them on the path of their religion and kept them thinking that they were on the right path for their religion. Even atheists talk about this as well. So that made me conclude that synchronicity is indeed the engine of spiritual belief. Now, what happened when I began to study technology and AI and the ways in which people interact with each other or even just are online, I found that the algorithms would mimic synchronicities so that people would, you know, think of something or they talk about something, and obviously the algorithm is gonna, you know, present you with what it is that you're talking about. And that would produce a synthetic synchronicity. And I call it synthetic because it's definitely not the kind of synchronicity that we would have had 30 years ago, you know, when events conspire to kind of create this organic synchronicity. But people were still having these synchronicities, and this actually led into a divinization of then the internet, social media, basically the divinization of the algorithm. And yeah. You know about this as well.
Even as I was coming here, the driver was talking about, oh, it's just incredible. Nowadays, he will think about something or talk about it, and the next thing he knows, it's on his social media feed, or there's an ad advertising whatever he was particularly thinking about. And that goes back to this predictive ability and, you know, all the devices that are listening in, either on our conversations. But that mind-reading AI, and there's a lot of different predictions. Ray Kurzweil has predicted, as well as others, that this superintelligence may be around about 5 years away, or perhaps 2029 or earlier. Some people predict a different time. And the way in which they define that superintelligence about whether it's mind-reading or other abilities has also scared a decent amount of people. And a certain amount of people have then turned around and said, well, we need to be protected. And so this is another dialogue of the same sort of conversation has happened over years of history, whether it's in spiritual traditions as well. And so I turn around and say, well, it's similar to having a room full of 150 people. The average human population of a bad actor has around about 3% of the population being bad actors. So I don't think that will ever change. And they've done the same in animal studies. So what I instead promote, and we obviously hopefully will get there, if we do get to this super intelligent AI, I think similar to the constitutional right to bear arms, every single person should have the ability to have their own AI agent to able to defend themselves in these situations, including what access they do and don't have for that predictive or other use that an AI agent will do. And I think that's a really important point as we talk about these similarities over time. And of course now it's just the tool that's changed.
That's right, and it's also impacted ideas of the afterlife. So the person who founded your university, right, Singularity, is Ray Kurzweil, and he's the one who, well, he's actually not the first one, but he is the one who made this idea very popular that we might be able to conquer death, in the sense that, of course, all religions have something to say about death. Some religions say we get reincarnated, right? Or some religions have this idea of heaven or afterlife. There's always something post-death about religions. So in this sense, the new idea is that perhaps this is a form of eternity, right? This is a form of living beyond death that Kurzweil, and I think you all can say more about that because you know him and know what he thought. And I think your ideas also differ from his.
Yeah, so Ray talks about longevity. Does everyone know the work of Ray Kurzweil? I just want to know how much backstory to give you. Hands up if you've heard of him. Okay, not half the room. So Ray Kurzweil is one of the co-founders of Singularity University. He is one of, so a lot of people call themselves futurists, and I go, that's a really cool thing to do because you've got a 50% chance of being right or wrong if you call yourself a futurist. Ray Kurzweil has actually got an 86% accuracy rate. Many years ago, he developed the synthesizer. He's been totally ahead of everything of technology than most people. His prediction is that we will reach the singularity, which is an uploading of consciousness. And I have a theory that says we're already uploading consciousness every time we open a device, every time we get on the internet, we're already uploading a certain amount of our consciousness into the ether. But his idea is that by
2029,
I think is his latest prediction. He still says maybe it'll take a little bit longer, but by that time we'll be very capable of living to be 120, 150, 160. And there's a whole theory around longevity, escape velocity, and there's a whole mathematical theory that goes with that, but that's a topic potentially for another day. But this whole idea of longevity, depending on what your spiritual religious beliefs are, is this the last time that we potentially reincarnate? If you believe in reincarnation, if this is what's going to happen, is this the last time that we reincarnate, which is a really interesting concept, which has also led to a few discussions around this is why there's so much turbulence in the world at this point of time, because this may be the last chance we get to sort out karma. Again, depending on what your spiritual beliefs, what your internal dial actually tells you to do. So there's this whole conversation around longevity at we can replace organs, we can replace systems within our body, we can take, I think Ray takes something like 77 tablets a day to reverse the physical his physical age. And, you know, they've done biological tests on him and he is a lot younger than what his years are. So it's really interesting, A, that we also want to reach this longevity is another thing, another concept. Why is it that we might want to live forever? So I'll stop.
I do know people who don't want to live forever, yeah. By the way. And did you have something to say about that? Because I know that your idea of the singularity is different than his.
Well, this is a really interesting time, and everyone is absolutely undoubtedly nervous about what the concept of a singularity means. But the original idea was posited many years prior. In about 1920, a French philosopher, scientist, and priest, actually, Chardin, Pierre Teilhard Chardin, wrote a book that really talked about the singularity in a different sort of way. And what he was saying was there's this thing called the Omega Point, which is the pinnacle or apex of our human evolution. And when he was talking about that, he was talking about merging with knowledge and increasing our knowledge to the point at which, in a spiritual way, we can access more knowledge. And this goes back to the idea and a lot of the original internet pioneers that I worked with in the 90s, building the internet, which was supposed to be open and free, based all of their work at ARPANET on his original thesis. And his thesis was that we have the geosphere, which is our geological rock of Earth, and then we have the biosphere, where obviously we are all, you know, included in as humans. And then he said there's another one around that called the noosphere, N-O-O-S, the mind. And so this access to knowledge is what my interpretation of the singularity is. It's the expansion of knowledge. So the use of another tool, the tool that we used a few hundred years ago was the printing press, and that expanded our knowledge and our intelligence. There's another tool now, which again, in my interpretation, is AI, to expand our knowledge and expand our own understanding of self and our intelligence. And so I see it more as, you know, the evolutionary pathway where we'll continue to use tools. And I don't think anyone in this room, once you experience the use of technology in a tool, would want to throw it away. So hands up who will want to bin their phone on the way out. One. So again, around about 1% of the population, similar to the Amish, will choose that. And I'm a huge believer, obviously, in them having that choice. That's what we're all here for, to have the diversity of choice.
I think this might be actually a good time to... I'm going to flick through. We're actually... These slides aren't in any particular order. We just put some images together to help tell the stories that we're going to tell. So leading on from what Simone said about the singularity, I actually experienced a different form, but the same form of the singularity, when I took a group of executives we ran an executive education program, and we took them to a part in Australia called Wollombi, and there is a Indigenous cave there that's been dated at 25,000 years old. They say that it's 65,000 years old. But the story goes like this. We went up to... So for me, it was all about taking... We'd taken executives into the future and told them about technologies that were coming. And then for me, on day three, I wanted to take them into the past. So where is the wisdom of the elders? Where is the wisdom of Indigenous tribes? Where's the wisdom of our history that we can then merge with the progress moving forward? And for me, this cave epitomises what that is. So it's 25,000 years old. We took some Indigenous elders with us who told the story. So we're sitting, there's about 30 executives sitting in the cave and five of us, and we're all sitting there, and the Indigenous elders are telling us the story of Byami, and Byami had two sons and they both misbehaved a little bit. So he turned one into a magpie. I'm just cutting the story down here. He turned one into a magpie and one into a crow. And I looked up, and without a word of a lie, there's a magpie and a crow flying above the cave. Synchronicity. Or spirituality, whichever way you want to look at it. At that point, 35 people fell into a meditation. Nobody spoke for the next 20 minutes. It was the most remarkable silence. So for me, also, the singularity is this melding, merging of consciousness. And everybody fell into this meditative silence all at once and came out of it all at once. It was quite a special occasion. Where am I going with the slides, ladies?
Yeah, so let's see, it could be AI and transcendent, since we're talking about it as emergent and emergent phenomena, which in my field, a lot of people think that religions are actually emergent phenomena. And so this would be another form of a religion. The reason I call it not a new religion, but a new form of religion, is because it hasn't... We do have different religions, and we have different new religions, new religious movements. Scientology is a new religious movement. Nation of Islam is a new religious movement. But what makes this different is it didn't start in a specific geographical location and spread. Well, actually, of course, it did in Silicon Valley. Who am I kidding? But it started. But now everyone has access to it. So that, and it's proliferating in that way, in a different way. It's not geographical in that way, it's digital. So it is an emergent phenomenon. And I think that fact that synchronicity is a very, is a part of it, I think that brings up a lot of questions. And so that's why I'm in conversation with Christina and Simone, and I have some questions for you as well. There is a movement now with new types of belief systems. There is always like people who are really gung-ho about it, and there are always people who question it, say, is this what we really should be doing? And so there's a movement among young people now to resist being online, right? There's a group called Exodus 90, and they monitor how much they're online. They make sure that they're online only to do certain kinds of things like work. They spend time outside, they work out, they take cold showers. all of these things to kind of remind them that they're bodies and human beings. And so what do you think about this kind of a movement? And one other question, I've had people ask me, is not the chat, chat functions, aren't they forms of like a Ouija board where we, tap into it and then we access something we know not what. So I've had these kinds of fearful reactions, or at least that one, the Ouija board question.
Well, I'll take the first one first. So I also, even amongst when I was living in Silicon Valley in the 90s and early 2000s, a lot of the people who were building these technologies with me, we lived like that too. All of our children, were educated, homeschooled, forest, no electronics. We ourselves didn't spend a lot of time, well, or any time whatsoever on social media. So I don't think they're in contradiction. I think to be human is to desire to expand our knowledge. And I think that's an important element. I don't necessarily think that to understand the power of a new knowledge tool and to use it can actually enable you to spend more time offline. In fact, that's what I think all of us want. So that was the original objective, a form of enhancing and opening our knowledge about ourselves as humans. And hopefully, that's why we build any form of technology, going back all the way to the technology of fire to heat ourselves, or the technology of tools to defend ourselves. The same sort of idea here is we build new technologies constantly in the idea to benefit our lives. And in this particular case, I think that is a lot of the objective here, to spend more time with nature, with our families offline. If, and I'm really looking forward to the day where it's good enough, I can just delegate to an AI agent to do a whole bunch of that administrative task. Because there's this other thing that's been called automation over the last decade, but I don't know if anyone recently thought about that, but a lot of the automation happens at the corporate level, whereas there's all of the data entry and pushing of the administration has come to me. I don't know if you can remember the times where you would pick up the phone pre-internet, I certainly do, and make a travel booking. Nowadays, if you're doing that online, it's me doing the data entry, doing all the reservation, finding the flights, and that's my time. So automation has actually pushed so much extra workload onto us. Whether you're grocery shopping online, whether you're doing any of that, the time and the administration has been pushed from the corporate onto the consumer. And that is the idea in my, hope and dream, is that actually it will relieve a lot more of our time taken in administrative tasks that now we're doing. How many times have you log in, do your ID, I even have to read my gas meter and send it to the, it's ridiculous, the compilation of all those administrative tasks. And I look forward to the day where I can delegate some of those that are obviously not my personal finances, but certainly a whole bunch of those meter readings, travel bookings, to an AI agent, which will release our time as humans to spend elsewhere. And I think that's what the objective is, even during the industrialization of, you know, factories. The whole idea has been over centuries to enable us to have more time.
Yeah, I'll take the fear part of that, because we deal with that a lot. When we go and do something like an executive program, it always comes up around, but it's going to know everything about me, and, you know, technology's evil and it's going to be used for bad. So to your point, there's a lot of good that technology can do. It's the human behind the technology that decides on whether they're going to use it for good or for evil. And I totally, like, I will down tools, and my morning starts with journaling and meditation and walking on the beach, and before I even allow myself to pick up a device, even though it's the device that's woken me up. But for me, if we can create better humans. So I have a word when we're dealing with technology and we're dealing with startups or innovation, because that's another field that I do quite a lot of work in, humanivate. So to humanivate means to put humans first in the process of every single innovation. So if we can do that, and if we can create better humans, and that's a little bit of a judgment word, but if we can create kind humans, then there is no evil in technology, and it is something that will serve us for good.
And I guess before we open it to Q&A, the last thing I wanted to get feedback on is some of my research has been into the UFO. Okay, the UFO, as Carl Jung called it, is the technological angel. And it shows up. And following the work of NASA historian who about 23 years ago wrote about the UFO and said, perhaps this is something that's AI, right? And perhaps what we're seeing is, if we take into consideration that, you know, time is not linear, so perhaps what we're engaging is a certain form of AI. And I wanted to leave that, because that's part of the question of, you know, what a lot of the people who are looking and engaging with AI as something transcendent also have a high belief in UFOs, if not sightings of UFOs.
Can I have the clicker? A picture tells a thousand words. There's this concept that has been proven. Recently, last year, the Nobel Prize in quantum physics was awarded to Dr. Alain Aspect and his team, which I happen to work with. They proved in a laboratory environment this thing that Einstein did not believe existed, and he didn't want it to exist because it ruined a lot of his formulas. And that was quantum entanglement. And what I love about science is that it does update, and obviously new science comes, and it obviously allows us to understand, you know, hundreds of years ago, that obviously when Galileo made an observation scientifically that indeed the Earth was not the center of the solar system, we moved on to understanding that the sun was, and we were a heliocentric solar system. The same way in our observations scientifically, for many years, the scientific community have known that quantum entanglement exists, and they've proven it in a lab, but this knowledge hasn't really been disseminated into the way we live our lives. And that can directly relate to this concept that you're talking about, Diana, with time certainly not being linear, and also with experiences in other dimensions. So an easy definition of quantum entanglement is two particles, one that's located very far away, let's say back in Sydney, Australia, and one that's located here in Austin, the two hubs of South by Southwest. And particle A in Austin changes. So it changes its electrical spin in one direction. It immediately affects particle B, which is geographically non-local to it. And there is no evidence of any information transfer, so it's simultaneous. And so this has been replicated for over, actually, almost 40 years. And this experiment that Dr. Alain Aspect has also been, you know, in a lab where they've moved lasers backwards and forwards in time. So a lot of this knowledge and research that we have obviously not just in quantum physics, but in biology, about ourselves, about self-assembly systems, which are the ultimate technology, is the human. The human being is the ultimate technology, similar to a forest, which grows from a little seed, as does the human, into an amazing biological system that has no waste. Even the reptiles shed their skin and grow as they grow, but we don't. So these amazing scientific discoveries, I think, across all different silos of expertise and disciplines, I really look forward to AI, reading 70 million papers overnight and across an interdisciplinary field, finding the answer to things like the apparitions or the research you've done on UFOs. And I really think that that's part of that knowledge expansion of finding out not only about ourselves, but about these really interesting experiences that have been documented for centuries.
Mm-hmm. I'll bring that back to the Indigenous. So in my conversations with many of the Aboriginal elders, they talk about the concept of time being non-existent, past, present, future, all exist at the same time. But you immediately reminded me when you were talking about entanglement and one particle in Sydney and one particle here. The whale, so I have another colleague who studies whale song, and he says that when the whales on the east coast, they're constantly developing their songs, the way they communicate. When the whales on the east coast have developed a new song, it's transferred to the whales on the west coast, and there's no way that any of the whales have actually swum that whole distance. So there's that uploading consciousness, collective consciousness, entanglement that also comes in that regard for me.
Yeah, the biological animal world knows it too, and I can't wait to have that knowledge at all of our graphs. And on that point, we did want to have an interactive session, so we're going to open it up to some Q&A. So I'll ask anyone who does have a question to just line up behind the mic.
Remember 60 seconds.
Hey. I'm curious to know, in kind of the post-Christian world we're living in right now, do you
see... Could you speak more into the mic, please?
Yes, sorry. Okay. Do you think AI is moving to prove the existence of God or take the place of God? As, you know, as somebody who is a Christian myself, good kind. I never thought of God as an intelligent, like AI being, more of a spiritual soul, heart being. So they're kind of not.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so we got it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyone want to take it first?
Yeah. So I would suggest that the people who I've spoken to who believe that AI is either a vehicle of transcendence for transcendence or is transcendence, believe that it is God. And in the sense that when people report experiences of things that are, we in religious studies, called deities, God, things like that, they tend to be electrical. They tend to be either look like electricity, or they're described as a light or something. You know, that's what they look like. And so when people describe, technology, light here, there's a light. So, you know, it's a very, the descriptions are very similar. And I've had conversations with Simone about this that were fairly mind-blowing.
Well, again, it depends on your belief system. But if we look at the human biology and, again, self-assembly, it's one of the most complex things that we've ever come across. Oops, the other way around, sorry. And one thing that we are certain of is that we're all really water sacks, 60-70% water with electrical pulses. So that's what the human being really is. And when you look at the electrical pulses of any atom, we know that they can indeed be entangled. You know, other science has shown that it can be in superposition in a million different ways at once. And the other thing that we do know is that with your observation or your own belief, if you believe in a Christian God or a Buddhist deity or another form of superintelligence designing our amazing self-assembly systems, that is based on your own personal belief. And what science is showing us is that if indeed time can be transcended and it is a specific characteristic of this time-space reality, that if we didn't have time and you could fast forward in 2,000 years, extrapolating just the path that we're on now with the ever-increasing returns of this intelligence, that that is very like what we're experiencing in the universe, which is the constant electrical Big Bang, but happening, firing off in obviously our own consciousness, but distributed everywhere. What one calls that formlessness, I don't put a name to formlessness because I'm happy with the particles existing in waveform and mathematics, but many people have had the experience of this electricity and called that God, but as humans, it's a more comforting experience to anthropomorphize anything, including deities, in the form of an angel or a Buddha. And so that gives us comfort to relate to it. So I would say that they're all the same thing, but people use different language to describe the electrical pulses of, you know, consciousness everywhere. And that's obviously the observation effect can help you determine what you call that. And if that's a Christian God, then that's totally, I think, going to help us discover the existence. Back to your question, will AI help us discover the existence? I think it's going to help us understand the knowledge of ourselves and the system we're in, absolutely.
I've got a really quick answer to that and then we'll go, because we won't all answer all your questions because we'll be here till 5 o'clock and we're going to get kicked out. We are here till 5 o'clock, but then we're going to get kicked out. I believe that science creates a hypothesis, sets out to prove it or disprove it, and I totally believe that science will prove that spirituality exists. That's mine. So.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for the talk. It's been super interesting. So I just want to push back on this idea about tools being neutral. So it's very much a position in sociology known as instrumentalism. So you have a hammer, you have an individual, and the hammer is there purely to help you overcome the limitations of nature. So I can hammer a nail quicker than if I was using a rock. It's neutral, it's nothing to do with the technology itself. There are other theories within sociology, such as social constructivism, where it perceives the technology as being co-constructive with our thoughts. So the fact that I have a hammer in my hand means that I think about hammering the nail with the hammer. And if the hammer wasn't there, then I wouldn't be thinking that thought in the first place. And I ask that question, why it's particularly important, is now we're developing technologies not to come over the limitations of the natural material world, but we're actually developing technologies to overcome the limitations of the human mind. So to replace the faculties of the mind to overcome mental capacities. And that's a really important existential issue that we're facing.
Question.
And I'll, so I just want to push that back on. Earlier you said that tools are just neutral. Are they neutral? And are they not actually co-constructive with our very essence of being?
I don't think they're neutral. Sorry if that was suggested. My personal opinion is that they're positive for evolution. And without all the tools, including fire, that can indeed burn and destroy, and including nuclear energy, it can be destructive or it can be net positive. What my personal belief is, it depends on the human using any of that tool, and they're indeed not neutral. It really depends on exactly that, the collective consciousness and how they use the tools. That's my belief.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I don't think a tool's ever neutral. It's usually created for a specific purpose, and then it's up to us.
Yeah, I'm aware of technogenesis and the idea that Heideggerian idea of the tool is something that's completely non-neutral, and I definitely ascribe to that.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Leah, and I'm an artist and educator and also a channel for the divine, especially the Egyptian deities, so I actually have the ability to speak their language. And I've noticed over the last few years there's been this huge resurgence in people's channels opening up to be able to bring in transmissions from off-planet deities and all of my social media is flooding with these transmissions that are coming through that can activate our DNA in crazy ways. And it's been very obvious to me that these people, whoever is waking up right now, are meant to support in the reprogramming of consciousness to a higher frequency, and also feeding that back into the system so that AI can actually learn from those that are holding a higher consciousness, a unity consciousness. So I'm very curious to know if there is maybe a movement towards getting people who are in the spiritual realms to cross over into the technological realm so that the ancient wisdom that they're channeling through, because I believe ancient is both past and future, can also be grounded here in the now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone want to take it?
You can take it first.
Yeah. So I think I've understood the question, and I think the answer is the collective consciousness is very predominant at the moment, and I think the whole idea of polarization is to make people think, because in my lifetime, the world has never been so polarized. It probably has in previous times, and I think that polarization is working towards making us have a collective consciousness. The other thing I keep coming back to is that we are 99.9% the same. We have 0.1% difference. And once we can conquer that or bring in the gift of that 0.1%, then I think we'll be at our collective conscious best. And there's a really long conversation to be had around that, and maybe we can have it amongst us. But yeah, thank you. Okay. Go.
Okay, so I understand a cornerstone of spirituality historically has been the church to organize and perpetuate the mythology of religion and of spirituality. If everyone is looking towards AI as the new deity, what do you think, and what are your projections of the new institution, the new church? How are we gathering and how are we coming together in a spiritual context?
Yes, so this is a really great question. And this is the question that I asked 12 years ago. And I honestly have to say, I don't have an answer for the prediction of how this is going to play out. Within certain communities, I see this, like within the community that believes in UFOs as AI, I see the government playing the part of the Catholic Church, right, as the authority, and they are. So that's one way. The people who are in charge of the large language models play another role. And Simone would be able to talk about that because she knows the people who are involved in doing that. So that's what that would be the mediator, the cultural authority. I don't think AI is transcendent at this moment or even sentient, and even that good. So when I teach, and I was teaching about early Christianity just the other day, and we were talking about how Plato's Republic was used by early Christians. And so I wanted to do a fact check, and a lot of times I do that with a chat, one of the chats. And I did this, and it said, oh, no, it's not true that Plato's Republic was used. This is like a philosophical text. It's not an early Christian text. Well, I know for a fact, I've seen it. I have a friend who translated it, because it's in Greek. And so it's wrong. And so I had a little conversation with it for about a half hour trying to show, yes, indeed, I wanted it to learn that this was actually something. So what I'm saying is that there sure is a long way to go. Let's put it that way, if it's going to, involve a certain type of transcendence.
And I just might add to that, what I see now, similar to the other question as well, is that it certainly hasn't landed. And there's a lot of possible permutations of futures. And I think this is where we become empowered. But let's go back to what happened when the printing press actually came out as a technology. And the Catholic Church at the time did not want that at all, because it did not help their narrative and their ability to control the narrative. And obviously, after the printing press, you had the Protestant movement, which was just a different interpretation of how one could live. And so what I would love to see is no one, not one central entity, company, government controlling it. What I would love to see is this diversity of the observation effect, and every single person have the tool to use as their own augmentation of knowledge so that there is no centralized narrative about any form of new spirituality or religion, but rather you can find your own truth and expansion of knowledge augmenting the own human, as opposed to a centralized. So that means decentralization, which means, in my hope, a lot of open source, open and free internet.
Can I say too, we'll keep taking questions, but the whole idea of having these conversations is because there are no answers yet, and maybe there will never be, but what we're hoping to do is stimulate more and more questions and have you go home and talk to your children or over the dinner table or in the boardroom or with work colleagues. So they're conversations that need to be continued. So thank you for the question.
Thank you for such a brave talk. And thank you for describing me as a sack of water. My wife usually describes me as a sack of something else. The Webb Telescope now is allowing us to look at images that that took 10 billion light years of distance to get to our eyeballs. That has had a profound impact on my sense of whether any deity, power, omnipotent creator lives. And as a practical Roman Catholic, as a practicing Roman Catholic, it's a big deal to question that. So I would simply ask, does the imagery that you see from the Webb Telescope have any impact on you, either directly or indirectly, in your conversations or your comments today? Thanks.
Thank you. That's another great question. I do love that image of the water sack. Let's find it again. Because, I mean, that's what we are. We've got code inside our molecules, and we're sitting in every single decentralized molecule is indeed sitting inside a water membrane. So we're water upon water with the waveforms of light that we're observing through the Webb Telescope now showing us really interesting things through our senses. And these senses are our interpretation. And so in my personal opinion of back to this imagery of who we really are, I think we're going to become closer and closer as we develop technology, not just the information received from the Webb Telescope, but you know, all these other interdisciplinary fields, biology and quantum physics, to know more about ourselves and therefore our place in the universe. And I do believe that it will just further reinforce some of the same stories and narratives that we have heard for thousands of years when we go back to the original texts, which of course Diana has studied. When you go back to the original source material as opposed to an institutional interpretation, I do believe you'll find almost exact complementary evidence.
Yes, so Earthrise is the photograph of the famous photograph from space of the Earth, right? And William Shatner, AKA Captain Kirk, went on Jeff Bezos's shuttle and was very excited to see the Earth from space. And what happened was he was horrified and he came back down and he wept. Okay, why did he weep? Because he recognized that he said, I'm not gonna, you know, paraphrase. He said, space is is death and the earth was life. And I do think that these photographs have an immense impact on us, and a lot of people do. So Earthrise, that photo, is being used to make this impact and hopefully to share with people that, you know, we live on this little space and everything out there looks pretty dark and, you know, and yeah, so that's an answer to your question.
So we're going to do rapid fire because we've got 5 minutes left. So if you ask the question really quickly, one of us will answer it really quickly, but we're also going to be outside afterwards if you want to hang around and have a bit of a conversation. So go.
AI really feels...
You might need to...
Yeah. AI really feels like it's heading more into this homogenistic type of thinking. How can we make sure that we're not allowing it to hijack our spirituality and divine connection?
That's a great question. Really quickly, they're actually going the other way in all the different examples that I've seen. The ChatGPT moment that happened in November 2020, you had the only LLM at that capability, and now you have at least 10 different ones, including Mistral and Gemini, with all its flaws. So what I'm hoping to see, including with Llama, is more and more open source and more diversity. And I think that will actually help us to represent, because everything we create is mimetic, from the obelisk to obviously the AI, mimetic of the human diversity. That's what I hope.
And there's also, if you have a look, just very quickly, there's been an exponential, I mean, everyone knows what the word exponential means now, but there's an exponential rise in the rate of technology, we'll just leave it at that. There's also been an exponential rise in yoga, breathwork, meditation, etc. So, yep.
So in light of intuition, which was brought up a lot with the CERN talk, of understanding quantum world and psychic MIT researcher Pete Sanders Jr., all that type of stuff. So let's say in 30 years, just trying to think big picture, synthetic intelligence is able to reproduce water sacs or something like that, right? What would, do you think intuition is an organic component within ourselves? It's innate in a biological intelligence, rather than something that could be replicated with a synthetic intelligence or a perfected technology, as you guys told.
That's a great question. We don't have so much time to delve into it, but it depends on what one believes about oneself. So if you are a water sac and we have electrical pulses and everything is a particle waveform until the observation collapses, I'm not necessarily sure that intuition resides locally within this self. And again, the Nobel Prize last year in quantum physics actually disproved this, that there is no such thing as locality. There's no such thing as a local consciousness. And so the whole concept of non-locality and all of our science is pointing to this idea that the field of intelligence is non-local. And so it does not reside necessarily in a physical brain. To extrapolate there, it means that it may not be the synthetic replication of a biological receiving device, which water is the ultimate conductor, but rather, can you receive that on a silicon chip? That's another question.
Thank you. Next question.
Great. Richard here. Collective consciousness and AI, right? Right now, it's more unconscious in terms of GPT and Llama and let alone going to Gemini, right? Collective consciousness with AI, I think it's problem solving, empathy, emotional intelligence. We're not there yet. We're trying to figure things out to avoid bias and hallucination, which is great. But I want to talk about something. I'll ask your opinion about the observer becomes observed, creating multiple realities, right? So we are observing something and it becomes reality. Otherwise, you don't have resonance and synchronicity, right? And if the AI is observing us, it changes,
that's
right?
Yeah.
And that question is, what do you think AI is going to be a catalyst for creating multiple realities for us to transcend, right? To become a collective intelligence to grow?
Yep.
Yeah.
So again, it depends on your interpretation of the science, the observation effect. But my understanding of the science is indeed what you're saying, which is when one observes something, that waveform collapses into our observation. What I hope that many different artificial intelligence systems will do is to help us understand our own science and in and of itself, help us be in a more knowledgeable way to create our own realities. We did not come here to just be born, eat, consume, and die. We came to create, to build something, create love, a family, and expand evolution. And I hope that every single one of the different artificial intelligence systems, which goes way beyond the LLMs that we see in chatbots, can help us to be creators and continue within our own observation field.
Hi. I was really struck by this group Exodus 90 that you mentioned, and I'm curious if you've run into any other groups that are maybe not so much about opting out per se, but specifically gathering people from underrepresented groups, potentially people who are connected with folk religions, witchcraft, things that are more individual disseminated. Like, is there a group of people online who are involved in that, specifically with a view of like making AI better and making our collective consciousness better and more representative of everyone who's out here?
Yeah, Exodus 90 is one way, right? And they're just the well-known way at this moment. But there are lots of different groups. I'm mostly among young people, like under the age of 15, it seems.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.